Welcome to Bruderhof Radio, a bi-monthly program broadening the bounds of discourse on progressive thought and progressive action. I'm your host, Andrew Zimmerman.
Can you imagine waking up every day, you cannot read, and you have to go out to the fields and work from the time you can see to the time you cannot see, and they did not give up hope that one day they knew they'd be free? And I say to you that I have not given up hope that one day we too shall be free.
On March 8, 1908, 15,000 textile workers took to the streets of New York demanding shorter working hours, better pay, voting rights, and an end to child labor practices. One year later, on February 28, the Socialist Party of America honored the strike by declaring a National Women's Day. The idea was expanded the following year to include the struggles of women worldwide, and on March 19, 1911, the first ever International Women's Day was celebrated across Europe. Since then, the United Nations marked March 8th as International Women's Day, when we commemorate women in the struggle for equal justice. This year, Bruderhof Radio marks the occasion with a look at women who are fighting not only for their own rights, but for the rights of all people, here in the United States. Today's program is a co-production with Blue Magazine, the magazine of political and spiritual activism and a sister media project of Bruderhof Radio. In a series of interviews with Blue editor Marianne Momsen, five women activists and artists spoke about their lives, their work, and their art. All of the comments heard on today's program can be read in full in the current issue of Blue Magazine, titled Women in Struggle. To begin with, we'll hear from Angela Davis, a longtime activist and critic of the prison industrial complex whose own arrest and wrongful conviction in 1970 won her national prominence. Here, Davis speaks of the 1960s in context of her work today.
The 60s was an era when there were global movements. Not only the civil rights movement in this country, the women's movement, the anti-war movement, but internationally, people were still rising up against colonialism. There were national liberation movements, figures such as Che Guevara, Patrice Lumumba. So that I would say that during that era, the perception was that we were on the cusp of a revolution, which may have inspired people in a way that is not possible today. I would say that in the 60s also, we had a much more simplistic idea of what it meant to conduct struggle, so that it was easier then as well. We tended to paint revolutionary ideals and movements and strategies in black and white terms, literally black and white, but also black and white in the sense that could single out an enemy and had not yet learned how to, formulate the complexities surrounding political issues, the relationship between state violence and domestic violence, for example, the intersections of race, class, gender, sexuality. We didn't have that conceptual apparatus. We didn't have that kind of a complex vision then. So I think that young people should not romanticize the 60s, but should simply recognize that this is a different era, that we know a lot more than we knew then, that we realize how much more complicated the process is that will lead us to a better world.
Angela Davis has provided inspiration to a unique group of women who make art an integral part of their activist work. In fact, one of the most prominent women hip-hop artists today, Medusa, is often referred to as the Angela Davis of hip-hop. Growing up in the shadow of the 1960s, Medusa's music was often influenced by the outspoken tradition of political activists like Angela Davis. It is these women, she says, that give her the courage to speak her mind today.
In the 60s, people were open with what they felt, politically or what have you, in regards to love, in regards to unity. And You know, I just feel like that was the perfect frame of mind for everyone to have. You know, like I always say, do it the way you feel it. You really have to speak your mind in order to be free. You know, I mean, that's true freedom, when you can actually not bite your tongue or hold back what you feel. You know what I mean? Just to appease someone else or another group of people. You know what I mean? So I think that mentality followed me from my childhood into this. You know, because there's a lot of people that are being dictated to, you know, what they should be saying or what they should be singing about. And then those that are free with their speech, truly free, they don't get as much recognition.
In the 1960s, speaking one's mind was less a question of recognition than of life and death. On the cover of Blue Magazine's women's issue is the last known photograph of Malcolm X, taken just moments before his death in 1965. With his head thrown back and his chest full of bullet holes, the great leader seems about to utter his final words. Above him, calm yet intense, is a Japanese woman. Her name is Yuri Kochiyama. In 1965, Kochiyama was living in Harlem with her husband when she met Malcolm X for the first time. Radicalized by the experience of anti-Japanese racism during World War II, both had already been active in the civil rights struggles of the time. Still, it was not until she met Malcolm X face to face that Kochiyama felt truly free to exercise her role as an activist.
Listening to him talk, I mean, he was always teaching. He was teaching more than black history. He was teaching what was happening internationally. He was different from every other black or Negro leader. He didn't believe in becoming a part of this government that harms so many other people. He believed in independence, an independent black nation. But I think Malcolm, even though he was demonized and all that by the press, he had the heart of the black people, especially the poor people and those in the ghettos, and I think any marginalized people, because he was telling the truth that most leaders were afraid to say of all the negativities in this country, like racism and inequalities. And because in Africa, African nations were trying to free themselves from the colonization of Europeans, that as people heard what Malcolm was saying, they felt Malcolm was more on target. And when you think today, as there is progress all over the world in the resistance movement and those who are against anti-imperialism, we feel Malcolm was certainly one of the greatest leaders of all time. He was speaking out on the most crucial issues.
Sonia Sanchez is another woman whose life was heavily influenced by Malcolm X. Like Yuri Kochiyama, Sanchez was exposed to the pain of racism early in life. Coming from the Deep South, she gravitated to Harlem in early 1960 and first met Malcolm X there less than a year later. Something in the way he spoke, Sanchez says, made her feel that she was being swept along in the currents of history.
But I learned from Malcolm, this Malcolm who did these what I call short poetic statements. In fact, I did on WBAI, after his death, I took his speeches and did poems from him. You know, I showed people the reason why he appealed to many of us, because it was poetry. And I divided the line, you know, and broke the line up and spoke it in a cadence. And people could hear it, you know. The cadence of his voice, the rhythm of his voice, okay? How he punctuated words, how he stressed words, you know, how he used humor, how he would use, you know, black English along the way. You see what I'm saying? And so what we did is that, and he was very raw on some things, right?
Right.
You know, and always on time. So what we did is we did the same thing. We responded to this Malcolm, right? Because Jimmy Baldwin said, and it's so in New York Times in about 79, I think, Baldwin said, the brutal truth is that America never had any interest in educating black people, except as this could serve white purposes. It is not the black child's language that is in question. It is not his language that is despised. It is his experience.
Mm.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
I love Baldwin. If you want to learn how to write essays, read Baldwin, you know?
Mm.
And that's what we're saying. What we decided to do, because what Malcolm was doing is that he was bringing our experience in a political way
right.
to us. And we went, whoops, our heads got jerked around. You know, it got knocked back. We sat back and we couldn't, you could barely breathe sometimes. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He would just sock it to us. So in our poetry, that's why I identify so with the rappers. Because in our poetry, we got up on stage and went, da 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 da. Boom, boom, take that sucker, boom, boom, boom. You don't like that?
Right.
Boom, how about this? Boom, boom, boom. Ha, 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 boom, 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 boom. And people like, what? Whoa, hold it. People initially walked out on some of us, you know, said, I didn't come to hear this kind of stuff because, you know, it was frightening. You see, people were nervous. I didn't want, and then we got up on stages and called ourselves black poet. I said I was a black woman poet, which is interesting going back looking at some of my notes from that time, right? You know, people didn't want to be, I'm a Negro with a capital N. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And maybe some people said Afro-American. A few political people said Afro-American.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, you know, we were black.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, black was not necessarily a nice word at that particular time. And I'm even talking about going on through the 60s, that a lot of people, you know, will claim Malcolm now. Through stamps, through his image. But then I asked them, you know, to claim him through his words,
uh-huh.
and they back away.
Mm-hmm.
Because his words are still potent, not just the image of him, you know, not someone who someone said, not just like seeing Malcolm as Denzel. A lot of the young people, you know, when they think of Malcolm, they see Denzel.
Right.
When I think of Malcolm, I see Malcolm. And I see him doing one thing for us. Malcolm spoke out loud what most blacks were thinking and were too afraid to say it out loud. He became our articulator of our dreams, our hopes, our despairs, you know, all of that.
That's how hip-hop started.
Medusa from the pages of Blue Magazine.
You know what I mean? And it's a conversation across worlds, across nations is what this is. You know, this hip-hop thing is. And right now, the youth needs to realize that they're playing the part as the elders right now
mm-hmm.
because this hip-hop music has been put in the forefront.
Yeah.
And our elders have been put in the back. You know what I mean? So we have to realize our place in this. Okay, now we're elders. Now the elders are generations that have passed
right.
are really speaking through us.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to allow that to be.
Right.
And not really check it and hide it and, you know, cover it up with a strong beat and you act like you're not hearing yourself and it's okay to say that. You really have to be true with yourself, you know, because
yeah.
spirit is like really the most powerful thing we got going. And if you ignore it, then you're ignoring your purpose for being here.
What Medusa calls spirit, the ultimate realization of our purpose for being here, may be why so many women have assumed the role of activist in recent years. Disillusioned by their own search for liberation, these women have found fulfillment in the work of liberating others. In this song, titled Put in Work, Medusa encourages young people to make their lives a positive force for change. You're listening to Bruderhof Radio and the Voices of Women in Struggle, brought to you this week by Blue Magazine. To order Blue Magazine or to give us your feedback on this program, call us at 1-800-778-8461 or visit us on the internet at www.freespeech.org/Bruderhof. Welcome back. I'm your host, Andrew Zimmerman. In the first half of today's program, we spoke with Angela Davis about the role of women in the 1960s and saw how free speech and activism influenced other women like Medusa and provided inspiration for today's underground hip-hop scene. In the high-octane world of today's corporate America, women face different challenges than they did two centuries ago. The pressures of the workplace, combined with the responsibilities of parenting and motherhood, leave very little room for the work of transformation and healing. New York-based artist Ra Goddess went through what she calls a corporate phase, but now she too has found liberation through activism.
For me, in terms of just what I feel I'm up to, is it's really defining what it means to be an artist that comes from a community. You know, like, what does it mean to be a community-based artist? And, you know, what does it mean to be an artist who is an activist? And, you know, that's really what my work, you know, is about. Empowerment, you know, celebration, empowerment, healing, and transformation is really, for me, what it's all about. Even through my corporate days, I always had a commitment to community. I've been a community activist for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And started in it very, very young. But there was always this calling, kind of nagging, you know, at the back of my mind or, you know, around this whole notion of, for me, using my art as a vehicle, you know, for kind of social change or just for promoting thought or transformation. And I went through a personal transformation in 1993. And then it kind of culminated with in 1995 with the death of five people.
Wow.
Who were very close to me in the space of 5 months. And though I had always been an artist kind of off and on, in and out, very much in the hip-hop scene, I'd been a hip-hop activist for years and years and years, but never really serious about my own craft, just because I felt like there was so much more work to do in terms of community and organizing and those kinds of things. But really, 1995 for me was the time where I really began to get clear that it was time for me to start to really focus in and honor my work in that way. So I kind of picked up my pen to heal. You know, after losing five people, it was just about a vehicle of being able to express the grief and the pain and the anger and the joy and all of those things associated with remembering the people that I lost.
In the case of Ra Goddess, the need to heal extends far beyond her own personal well-being. Her commitment to transforming society, she says, is what drives her to share her music with other people.
I have a commitment that young people are empowered and transformed around their circumstances. And I think that, you know, that if we were to really be honest and look at kind of the state of where we are as adults, you know, then I don't think we would be so kind of puzzled about what's going on with our young people, you know.
Yeah.
But like to be resigned at 15 says a whole lot, you know, about the state of things. Mm-hmm. And I just have a commitment to transforming that.
Medusa agrees.
I know I want to bridge some generation gaps that have been, you know, kind of deteriorating over the years. I know that, you know, I want to give something to the children so when they grow up, you know, they have something other than what this era of blunts and body piercing has given them. I know that I want to affect the churches and maybe not just have them build another church, but have them build a greenhouse, you know what I mean, to teach the children how to crop and sow. You know what I mean? I know that I want to have a summer camp, you know, some buses to take children out in the nature and teach them how to live off the land and about their hygiene and things like that. And, You know, I don't think a lot of people look at the bigger picture truly. They look at a bigger picture in a selfish sense.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people achieve, all of these prosperous things and they don't give back fully. You know, it's one thing to give to a charity, and it's another thing to take a group of children and really share yourself with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I really think people need to open their eyes and their hearts and souls to that, too.
In her latest release, titled The Elements, Ra Goddess compares the aspects of her craft to earth, fire, water, and air, the substance of our living reality. She says that these elements are not only ours to use, but in fact represent the essence of who we are as people.
Running a bargain basement sale on the future. My culture be the reality of hard times with not enough in my brain, but way too much on my mind not to be brilliant, resilient, and shine. Hip-hop be the elements of unfinished business, recycled to complete the legacy of creative expression that began way before the charting of time. I can't help but be the X factor. Earth, fire, water, air. The elements I don't just do, but am. Earth, earth, fire, fire, water, water, air, the elements I don't just do.
What I do is called flowetry, which is kind of a blend of emceeing and freestyle poetic verse and song. My work is about healing, you know, myself, and through that process or that journey, hopefully providing the opportunity for others. And I think my work is just kind of representative of life, the experience of life and all that life brings. You know, one of the things that I find, when we do the kind of work that we do is you really have to approach it from a place of being completely humble and really assuming that you don't know anything and then kind of working your way back from there. And I do think that the key word is relevant, is that young people need more kinds of support and intervention that's relevant to where they're at.
New people coming into the movement must know more about their own government, the United States government, and what it's doing all over the world.
Yuri Kochiyama speaking to Blue Magazine.
United States, because of its wealth and its military power, has been able to change conditions in other countries and other parts of the world, and has often inhibited smaller countries from having any power, and they have threatened countries so that no matter what continent you think of, you see that there is American military power and corporations everywhere there. And I think new people coming in have to learn the true history of America, which was not taught till maybe the 60s, 50s or 60s, when the Civil Rights Movement began. But me being 78 and having gone through the old educational system, we did not learn anything about, you know, American Indians, that they were the ones who inherited this part of the world. We didn't know what was happening in Africa, that all those areas were being taken over.